our coming attractions.
I don't know about you, but I'm concerned with what's happening in this world.
We have got to realize that we're being conditioned on a mass scale. Start challenging this corporate slave state.
Hey, look, it's Alex Jones!
Whoa! Hey, Alex!
We love you, Alex!
I'm concerned with the structure. I'm concerned with the systems of control. Those that control my life and those that seek to control it even more!
What a bunch of garbage, liberal, Democrat, conservative, Republican. It's all there to control you, two sides of the same coin.
Two management teams bidding for control, the CEO job of Slavery Incorporated!
Uh-oh, Antifa speed bump.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not gonna take a bite out of it. Do you got me? We're gonna stand up, and we're gonna be human beings. We're gonna get fired up about the real things, the things that matter, creativity, and the dynamic human spirit that refuses to submit.
I wanna break down the new world.
That's what I want, and that's what you should want.
AlexJonesLive.com, because there is a war on for your mind. Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
There you go. They tried to silence him. It only made him louder. Waking Life 2026 from Darren McBreen. Follow him at Media Rival on X. Great AI rendition of the classic film. And it's amazing. I mean, most of those lines were from the movie, right? I recognize most of them. It seems like one or two maybe were new, but when was that? No, some of those were. They weren't? I recognized some of them. But he's driving around in Waking Life. I mean, when was that? 2003? Like, that was decades ago. And everything he was saying was just as pertinent then or now as it was then. And so much of what we're dealing with on a daily basis does go right back to this idea of they're training you, they're getting you used to it. They're shackling your mind in ways that really are hard to comprehend. I'll show you a video on the other side. It is the latest of a series. I can think of at least three videos of almost exactly the same thing happening in the UK, where a white guy is attacked by black people and the cops immediately rush in and arrest the white guy. And it's like, that's the type of thing where you look at it and you go, how would you even get to this point? How do you train people to do this type of thing? And you realize it's got to be literally decade upon decade of not just training in the official forces, but the societal manipulation that goes into this, to where, like, when a cop sees people fighting, something goes off in their head where they go, get the white guy, get that white guy, black guy. They see them both and just, like, you know, the white guy glows red in their view. And they just attack him. Again, let's get those other two videos too, because I want to play all three of these back to back. So there's the other one, like last week, same exact same thing. White guy gets attacked by a black guy. In that instance, the cops come in, grab the white guy while the fight is going on. So the white guy then has his hands pulled down. He's getting hit in the face by the black guy, who is the attacker. Then black guy walks away and the cops like sit on the white guy. And then, of course, you have Henry Novak as well. These guys are just lucky they weren't stabbed, because the cops probably put him in handcuffs and let him die on the curb like they did with Novak. I mean, this is the ultimate success of decades of programming.
Do not help fund the resistance. You sit comfortably. You consume. You watch. You wait for others to fight the battle for you. The dark side has you firmly in its grasp. Every day, you remain on the sidelines. my power grows stronger. Continue believing. Someone else will save the galaxy. It pleases me greatly.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Nothing can stop me. The force lies within.
There is no escape from what you are becoming. Lay down your weapon or be destroyed.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network. AlexJonesLive.com is the URL to share. Support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Get yourself one of these stylish hats, which I guess I'm just wearing for the rest of the show now. I guess that's happening. I mean, I wore the wig at first, and it made my hair messed up, so now I'm just wearing this cool stylish hat that you can get at thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Let's go now to this video. It's just the latest in a series of videos. Henry Novak, of course, being the most horrifying example, and an example in which the knife man, the attacker, used the pre-established racism of the UK police in order to kill his victim. He knew that if he said that the person racially abused him, that he'd get away with it. So that's exactly what he did. The police believed him. And again, at the time we said it, and now, you know, I'm even more convinced that police are likely literally trained in this way. Like specifically, like if you see a fight, go after the white guy. That sounds crazy that that would be trained. But like the other option is that that mindset, while not explicitly said, is just understood by the entire police force, to a degree that it genuinely doesn't make any sense. So the video you're about to see, it's even worse than the one we showed last week. The one we showed last week was one guy fighting one guy. This is three black guys attack one white guy. The cop rushes up and slams the white guy into the wall. And you can tell the white guy, he's getting jumped. He's being attacked by a bunch of people. He doesn't even realize it's a cop that's now attacking him. Which is like part of the crazy part, right? Is like he's being attacked. Another person is attacking him like all at the same time. That person just happens to be a cop. Wait, what? So then he swings at the cop and like he kind of realizes halfway through the swing and he kind of pulls his punch a little bit. But they're likely going to charge him with like assaulting an officer. He has been charged with assaulting an officer. But like that alone is like, what type of situation are you being assaulted? And like, as it's going on, there's a cop also assaulting you. But if you fight back, you get thrown into prison. Like, we got an update here. They charged him with assault on police officer. They described the assault of a lone white teenager as groups fighting. So let's watch the video. So here's the video. The white guy in the UK, you go out for a drink, you're walking through the streets of your own city, you get jumped by a bunch of dudes. Before you know it, you're under arrest and going to spend the next couple of years in jail because the cops joined in on the gang assault on you and you didn't know instantly. What? Here's the video.
I'm trying to go home, bro.
What? Are you on strike?
Please, I'm trying to go home, bro.
Wow, so this is the end. Let's back it up to the beginning. So he's just standing there. Oh, he gets slammed to the ground by that guy, punched by that guy, and then slammed to the ground by the cop. Why would she? So she saw everything. So back it up. We got to go back to the beginning. So I want to watch this almost in slow. So clearly the cops are watching this happen. They're right there. They're they see this guy. They see him slammed to the ground. That guy gets punched. Why did the cops go after that guy? What would be the justification? What the hell? There's no even possibility that this guy didn't even throw a punch. He gets slammed to the ground. As he's getting up, he gets punched in the back. Thank God that guy didn't have a knife. Why would the cops arrest this guy? I was thinking this was more like the other clip where, like, at least the guys are fighting. I hadn't watched it, you know, that closely, this beginning part yet. But no, it's clear on rewatch. The dude didn't even throw a punch, didn't even defend himself. So the cop sees this kid get, and then immediately she's slamming him to the wall. This is what I mean. How do you get to this point? What type of reaction is that? Be aware of footage showing the arrest of a man after a disorder on Broad Street at 1:30 a.m. on June 21st. Officers found a group of men fighting. As the incident was dealt with, an officer was punched. The man was arrested and charged with assaulting a police officer. The community note, this description is false. One man was surrounded by multiple others. The man was assaulted and thrown to the ground. While on the ground, he was punched in the head. While getting up, police officer threw him against the wall while his assailants were allowed to go free. This is what I mean. Like, yeah, and this is the official Birmingham police statement. Like, to me, this is, like, weirdly, almost less understandable than the Henry Novak case. Because the Henry Novak case, they lied to the cops when they called them. So the cops show up thinking they're, you know, going to, yeah, police arrested the teen who was knocked down while the attackers fled. The video has X demanding answers. Well, that's why we got to, you know, censor X. This is why we have to censor X. I mean, without X causing problems, this would be a very simple matter of throwing that kid in jail for years and silencing any media outlet that dared to speak about it. Oh, yeah. And then they're like shoving him in the car, cursing at him. And he's backward. He's like, they're not even shoving him in the right way. He's like facing the wrong way. And they're like shoving him in, bashing his head against. And by the way, there's more videos of this. They're like cursing the kid out. She calls him an effing D. They're like, you get in the car, you effing D. And it's like, he didn't do anything wrong. He got assaulted. So like it's almost less understandable than the Henry Novak. The Henry Novak case, from the cop's perspective, they get a call, this kid was racist, they show up. Like, I'm not defending it, but like it's actually more understandable that they were lied to, that, you know, the people who did the assaulting were BSing him. But in this one, the cop sees the assault, sees a guy get clotheslined to the ground, punched in the back of the head. He never throws a punch, never raises his hand. And as he's standing up, the cop slams him into the wall. You tell me what was going through her mind. You tell me, you know, what sort of logic was involved here. It genuinely is beyond explanation. Yeah, and 8 more cops show up. Half of them tiny women. Here's the other one. Let's go to this video. This is the one we played last week. Very, very, very similar situation. If we can back it up to the beginning, we can see, once again, same type of thing. But almost less egregious, because again, you know, these are two guys fighting. But you'll see the black guy starts the fight. The white guy's backing away, trying to back up, trying to defend himself. The cops run up. In this case, they grab the white guy while the fight is going on. And so the black guy gets a free punch while the white guy's hands are pinned to his sides. And the black guy is still allowed to continue punching. So there, the black guy's attacked the white guy, punches him in the face. The cop runs up, grabs the white guy's arms. Black guy gets one slug in the face. Cuts the guy's face open. Black guy's never even, you know, one guy puts a hand on him, but the white guy, again, still, he's just like, I didn't do anything. I'm being attacked. The cops slam him to the ground, sit on him. 2 more cops come over, slam his hands to the ground. I bet this guy was charged with assaulting an officer as well. And both times, both white guys are just like, what is going on? What did I do? I'm just trying to go home. They aren't starting fights. They aren't even throwing punches in some cases. The cops are, they see it all happen and yet still attack the white guy and arrest him. You tell me what's going on here. This is an update from Birmingham Police. This incident has been reviewed and we have no concerns over the officer's action and we are satisfied that they were reasonable and proportionate to the circumstances. We ask that footage is not further shared to allow the legal to allow the legal process to take its course. Well, I think the people of Birmingham should burn the police station down. Tell you what, I would never call for violence, but my immediate thought is violence, is extreme violence against this. This is what I mean. I'm not interested in arguing about it. We saw it on video. I don't care what they say. I don't care how they try to justify it. They're going to keep doing this. Like they aren't even guilty. Like they aren't even sad. They aren't even shamed about this. They approve of what the officer did. They watched the same video we just watched and said the officer acted exactly as they should act. I think white British people need to rise up in arms and overthrow their government. I think they need to all get weapons and kill their enemies that are occupying their homeland. Is that too extreme? Am I being too extreme right now? I don't know. I just put on this hat. Suddenly I want cannon fire. I want to hear cannon fire. I'm open to suggestions. The problem is, I've thought through this. I've gamed this out. I've pursued every possibility. And there's no way to reverse this. You tell me, again, I'm open to suggestions. You tell me, what do you do to get the UK back on track when multiple times a week, it seems at this point, we are getting videos of white people in Britain being viciously assaulted by foreigners and the police immediately arresting the white person, assaulting the white person, and then throwing the white person in jail when they're the victim of the crime? How do you think we get out of this? How do you think you get back on track? Because I could offer some possible ways, and I think as soon as I mention them, you will understand how utterly impossible it is. For example, you could point out to the officers who did it, you may have been caught up in the moment, but reviewing the video, it is very clear that you just assaulted a victim of a crime. We just read how that didn't work because they don't care. So what do you do? Like, what do you do when you can show video evidence that they did something wrong and they don't admit it, they don't acknowledge it, and then they tell you the problem is people are sharing the video and you need to censor the internet so that video can't be shared? What do you do? I think you take the message, you get the message, you receive the signal, talking is not going to work anymore. And these people have made it impossible for us to get back on track. And, you know, we played the video yesterday of the Indian guy just being like, yeah, we're going to burn it down. It's all going to be trash. It's all going to be, you know, nothing. And like, that seems to be the motivation. It genuinely seems to be just the mission to just destroy everything on purpose, by design. And when you realize that's the case, because there's no alternative, there's just not, right? A black man who got beaten by men for exposing himself in public place was saved by a white woman. This will be the image of the fall of our civilization. White privileged women importing and supporting the threat because they feel. Yeah, this was a story in Italy. Black guy at a beach, completely naked. He drops his drawers and is standing there masturbating in public in full view of everybody. The Italian men go up and start beating him. Well, they go up and tell him to stop, and he won't, and they start fighting. And then a woman runs up and is just like, leave him alone. You leave him alone. He's just masturbating to children. He's just pulling out his penis on a public beach and showing it to children. Leave him alone. I say, do something else. I say the opposite. Now, I just very blatantly called for revolutionary violence in the UK. So if I'm not willing to say what I actually think should happen to the black guy on the Italian beach, I think you can understand it's a hell of a lot worse than calling for violence. It's like, I'm communicating to you telepathically now what must be done. You guys heard that, right? Was that in my brain? That may have been in my brain. Accurate, but very accurate. You know, this is kind of a good example of what I'm talking about. We're clearly not as far down the line as Europe is. But let's go to 26 here, clip 26. Atlanta, the city of Atlanta, spent $130 million building glass walls to stop fare evasion on their subway system. Let's see how that worked. Well, it worked pretty well. Looks like we're up. Never mind. Oh, well, there you go. Well, there you go. Problem solved. That's a woman with a can-do attitude. Hey. I mean, sure, you know, what does it cost? A dollar? You know, what does it cost? A dollar to get on the train in Atlanta? She can't do it. She would rather bodily throw herself through glass than pay a dollar. Like, this is kind of what I mean. It's like, you know, what do you do when all of the traditional methods of maintaining order in a civilization, you just aren't allowed to do because it hurts the feelings of the people abusing you? When it hurts the feelings of third world migrants that got here yesterday and are angry because they haven't found a woman to rape yet, like, and we have to put their feelings above everybody else. What do you do when the very simple, obvious solutions that have maintained civilization through all of time are suddenly deemed off limits by a bunch of psychopath, weirdo idiots? What do? You try to come up with novel ways of enforcing it that don't seem like they're enforcing because we don't want to be mean, but they are stealing our stuff. So can we put up glass walls? They'll look fancy. They'll look fancy and they'll look nice and that'll work, right? It's like, no. These are feral people. They're feral. Okay. This isn't effective. This doesn't work. This is not how you solve these problems. We don't solve these problems by talking about it with the people that are screwing us over. We don't solve problems of thievery by hiding the merchandise behind plexiglass walls. These are all novel, newly introduced concepts that only have to exist because the obvious, simple, effective solution is deemed off limits. We have to stop listening to anybody who says that we can't do the necessary things to put ourselves back on the right track. If you have a problem with fare evaders, you need to arrest the fare evaders. The perfect world, the ideal civilization, which existed for a very long time in this country and Europe, is a world where there are no barriers, there are no locks on doors, not because there is a universal panopticon surveillance system who's going to punish anybody for stepping out of line, but because you have intelligent, thoughtful, good-hearted people running around. We have replaced a population of decent, respectable, God-fearing, intelligent people with people from the third world. And I don't even blame, I mean, in a lot of cases, it's literally not their fault. They have an IQ of 70. It's really not their fault. It's almost cruel to expect them to be able to deal with modern American civilization. They don't have the capacity. So why did we import them by the millions? That's my question. I don't hate them. I want them to do well. I just don't want to destroy my civilization because they're incapable of living in it. Do you see what I mean? And this goes for everybody. Why are we listening to them? Why do we change ourselves to comport with them? Everything that we've talked about today is like this. You don't like the people who are anti-Semitic? You don't get to destroy the First Amendment. You have to leave. You have to go home. You're incompatible with us. And this is our home. So you leave. That's how this should work. If you can't pay $2 to get on the Atlanta subway system, you should be thrown in front of the subway car. You should be sent back home. Why do we keep changing our civilization to comport with people who hate our civilization and are incapable of upholding it? It really is infuriating. This story we'll continue to cover on the other side, and we are going to talk about Israel. I don't care what Alex says. I'm going to break the chains. I'm going to rip off the muzzle. I'm going to talk about Israel. You know what? Enough is enough. I've held my tongue for too long. I'm going to do it. I'm going to talk about Israel. U.S. officials believed Israel was plotting to kill Iranian negotiators. New York Times. I'm always having to do with the New York Times. Edit New York Times in real time. Again, I'll add again, because they already did this multiple times. U.S. officials believed that Israel might have been plotting to kill Iran's top negotiators while Washington was engaged with Tehran in delicate talks this spring to reach an interim peace deal, according to the current and former American officials. Killing senior Iranian leaders has been a part of Israel's strategy from the start of the war, but American concerns about targeting two particular Iranian officials, Abbas Araghchi, Iran's foreign minister, and Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, the president of the parliament, spiked during delicate ceasefire negotiations that began in April. Fearful that an Israeli assassination effort would doom the negotiations, the United States, according to some of the officials, went so far as to ask other countries in the region to warn Iran about the possibility that Israel could target two officials. Oh, I'm sure they were unaware. Hello, Iran. This is Qatar. Do you know Israel is trying to kill you? We're pretty sure they are, for sure. Not something we need to... This is another one of these things. Do I need to say it? Do I need to explain any of this? Like, this is one of these things, and I feel like there's a lot of this. Happens with my family a lot now, where, like, something will happen on the news or whatever, and my family just, like, turns and looks at me, and I'm just like, yeah. Like, this is kind of how I feel, where it's just like, you just read this, and it's just like, have we not been telling you? Have we not been telling you that they've been doing this the entire time? Have we not made this a central core of our, you know, you just, it's just one of these things where, you know, if you're ever talking to people that are like, Israel's our friend, it's just like, are they though? Are they though? They're not. They're our enemy. For the love of God.
Do not get this ad. Do not support the broadcast. Support Mondami.
Hello, Alex.
Have you told people what you got caught doing?
I returned the hat, sir. I did.
Bigley only sent us two of these. I stole one. I've been wearing it. I wore it in today, and I said, Harrison, I noticed there was a hat in here. It's missing. I said, did you take it? And Harrison said, yes, sir, I cannot lie. That's how coveted these are at thealexjonesstore.com. That you may have it. Actually, I have Bigley sending us more. I designed, you like it.
I love it.
No, actually, and in fact, everybody takes the stuff they send of it after we've shown it. But the point is, this is very coveted.
It's
it
very
does
cool.
fund the operation. I just wanted you to tell a story about your covetousness. This is, I presented it to you.
I really did. Thank you very much.
You deserve it. You didn't actually steal it.
Well, thank you.
But I did. The point is, I knew when it was gone, you had to have it.
I did
and
check.
You have to have it and fund our operation if you want us to expand. We love you.
I did check. I made sure there were two because I didn't want to take the only one.
But see, I wanted one.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well,
I had to steal one.
And actually, as soon as I got home, my son saw it and was like, are those guns on that hat? I said, yeah. So now
I've already told Bigley, mail us more.
All right. Well, folks. You can be like us.
I just came in to be honest. This wasn't planned. I'm being silly. You're kicking ass, by the way.
Thank you.
There's some badass 250th anniversary stuff. I said it's all limited edition. Some of this stuff's too good. It's not limited edition.
It'll last forever. But look,
I don't know why everybody loves it. I wore that out in public this week and I got like 10 comments.
It is a very cool hat. I don't know what it is either. It's classic. It's simple. Yeah, very simple. Got the two musket design. It's very high quality. The stitching is real. It's not just like a patch. That's all you can actually see here. If the crew can go to dot cam.
I apologize. No,
please, I get to talk more about this hat. You can actually see, I mean, you can see the stitching on the other side. It's not just a patch on top.
You want your son wants that?
He took it, yeah. My 5-year-old. My 5-year-old is wearing it as we speak.
That's like an ad out of that, though.
It's very cool. It's a very cool hat. And look, folks. You're going to be the stylish person at the 4th of July barbecue. That's all I'm saying. I want to see these hats seared with fireworks because of irresponsible celebration during July 4th. But I wasn't lying, folks. I really did take that. I did do it surreptitiously, though. On Friday afternoon, I picked the hat off the shelf and I looked around. And I said, okay, there's still a hat there, so I'm not taking the last one. And I left with it on my head.
I wasn't
secretive.
I just caught you, American. No, you were like.
Exactly.
Mine. Caught your head. Do not get this hat. Do not support the broadcast. Support Mondami.
Support Mondami. That's right. Get the hat, folks. You can get the hat today. I think it's on discount, even though we could sell out of this thing without giving any discount at full price. And like I said, folks, I mean, pretty much any store you go in these days, whether it's a little local, you know, kitsch store, or you go in Walmart or Target or wherever, they almost all have a big display with their merchandise for America's 250th. They're doing it because they think they can make some money off you. We're doing it because this is our driving force. This is our life. This is what we've dedicated ourselves to. The 250th anniversary to us is not just, you know, oh, let's rotate out the seasonal merchandise, you know, get rid of the cool stuff, move in the patriotic stuff. No, this is our lifeblood. This is what we truly believe. This is who we are. And if it's who you are too, you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. And it depends on where you live, but you may still be able to get those delivered by July 4th so you can have it in time for the big 250th celebration.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. Story from New York Times. U.S. officials believed Israel was plotting to kill Iranian negotiators. They say the war began on February 28th with an Israeli strike that killed the Supreme Leader Khamenei and other top officials based in part on U.S. intelligence. When U.S. strikes focused on Iran's navy and missile forces, Israel prioritized the leadership in the early phase of the war, intent on killing as many high-ranking officials as it could. That included killing potentially more pragmatic leaders that the Trump administration had hoped to negotiate with, such as Ali Larijani, Iran's top national security official, and Kamal Karazi, a former Iranian foreign minister. Both men were involved in the negotiations with the U.S. when they were killed in Israeli airstrikes. The Trump administration's suspicions about the possible Israeli plot to kill the top two negotiators show how the U.S. and Israeli war aims, which were close to the very beginning of the war, quickly diverged radically. And while the United States wanted a peace agreement, Israel had been skeptical from the initial cessation of hostilities in April. The initial 2-week ceasefire in April was met with grudging Israeli official support and broad public concern in Israel that the United States was ending the war too early. Rather than being driven from power, the theocratic government of Iran had become even more hardline, and Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps had only consolidated its control over the country. Okay, so Israel got us into the war, and then Israel killed the negotiators we were working with to try to end the war early on. Then apparently even now, the negotiators that we're dealing with were under threat of assassination from Israel. And the only point could possibly be to keep America in the war, to continue the cost to us, and if possible, to expand our involvement to boots on the ground, because that's what they need to achieve their ultimate war aims. And I kind of feel like this, how I feel about censorship, where it's like, I think it's completely outrageous and, you know, suicidal. It's just retarded to like be killing the people you negotiate with. But it's like, if that's the situation that we're in, then we should be killing the Israelis. Like, it's kind of like, if it's good for you, then, you know, if it's good for them, then it's good for you kind of thing. It's like, as soon as you start doing this, and the thing is, I've been talking a lot about this. I've been thinking and reading a lot about this because I'm doing a multi-part series right now with Off Limits News on NXR Studios. You can find it on YouTube. Just search Off Limits News or NXR Studios, Harrison Smith, about Rise and Kill First, a book that describes the history of the targeted killing program in Israel and that, you know, has become and really from the beginning was like their primary method of geopolitical involvement, killing everybody, killing absolutely everybody. And the first episode's already out. The next episode will be coming out tomorrow, but I thought I'd give you a little preview with like just a couple pieces of information you might find interesting about the formation and methods of Israel's targeted killing. The first thing you need to understand is that the Foundation of Israel, sponsored by the Rothschilds, originally started in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and the primary operatives carrying out attacks against Arabs or assassinating foreigners that were against Zionism, they were all socialist revolutionaries who had carried out assassins and guerrilla warfare against the Tsarist forces in Russia. When they lost that and the revolution didn't pop off at that time, they all fled to Israel and they brought their tactics with them. Murder, guerrilla warfare, assault. And the attitude from them was, if you cross us, you die. And time again, you know, in the book is written from an Israeli perspective, so they try to justify it. But a lot of people they kill were not an existential threat to them. They were inconvenient. There was a Dutch rabbi named Dejan, J-A-A-N. He was a very devout Orthodox rabbi who happened to be anti-Zionist in the early 1900s before Israel existed. And so they murdered him. Okay? He was a Jewish person. He was ultra-religious. He actually lived in Palestine, I believe. But he was against their Zionist project, so they murdered him. Like, that's the way they dealt with people. And often, it was actually almost always presented as, you know, these people are Nazis. They want to or have tried to kill us all before. Therefore, they deserve death. We ascribe to them the death penalty. And it goes over this long history. The first episode gets into it extensively about this organization called Gamul that was within the British Army. There was something called the Jewish Brigade, and basically the civilian leadership in Israel convinced the British Army to bring on 38,000 Jewish soldiers in this Jewish Brigade. And within that brigade was a secret cabal called Gamul that was using their access as British officers in British uniform to go find German POWs that were in British apprehension to torture and kill them, just using the British Army as a vessel through which to exact revenge against these, you know, random Germans who had lost the war a few years earlier. And in that, you know, they didn't prove that the Germans were gas chamber operators. In fact, they knew in many cases they were just low-level sort of Nazi party functionaries or just like government bureaucrat employees, but they would kill them anyway. And this is justified in the minds of the assassins with the phrase, rise and kill first. These people are trying to kill you. You can rise and kill them. The thing is, the people doing the killing themselves have long-term plans to take over the land of Israel, drive everybody out, and kill anybody who resists. Now, they didn't admit that. They didn't publicize that. But that was the case. And so it seems to me like if you were to take their own moral framework and apply it to themselves, then literally the British, the German, the Arabs, and the Palestinians in Palestine, they had every right to murder all of the, or, you know, early arrivals of the first or second Aliyah. Because according to their framework is, if you're going to kill me or if you're going to take my stuff, like in one story in Rise and Kill First, I mean, that's the way they justify it. They go, this guy was a Nazi and he was in charge. You stole the Jewish people's stuff in Germany. You took it to yourself. And that same guy in 1917 had himself been driven out of Palestine by the British when the World War I broke out. And it's just one of these things where it's just like, okay, is that the bar? Is that the barrier? If somebody takes your stuff, you get to kill them. If somebody drives you out of your homeland, you get to kill them. Because if that's the case, then you all deserve death. And it would be absolutely justified. So I'm sick of this double standard or this, like, you know, oh, you know, well, we're just innocent poor refugees and we're being attacked by the Arabs. Meanwhile, they're holding these secret meetings that are like, we are going to kill all of them. They have these massive weapons caches. Like, it's all just deception and lies. But that core socialist revolutionaries from Eastern Europe that move to Israel, start living on kibbutzes funded by the Rothschilds, they start killing people. They start killing Arabs. They start killing British mandate operatives. The King David Hotel explosion, the Levant affair, you know, all these things happen before Israel is a state. It's just a group of random guys. It's just a group of dudes from Eastern Europe who first try to take over Russia. You know, again, it's not like they have this like lifelong dedication to religious Zionism where they're motivated by a sense of, you know, religious adherence to go, you know, settle the Holy Land. No, they tried to take over Russia first. It failed. So then they went to Israel to take that over. Like, they're just brutal communist terrorists. That's who they were. That's who they are to this day. That core of just mobsters, gangsters, assassins, killers, operating in secret, murdering anybody who opposes them, forcefully taking over things that don't belong to them. That was the core and remained the core of Bar Giamora, the first, you know, Jewish militia, non-state terrorist group in the Middle East. That became HaShomer, that became Haganah, that became the IDF, Shin Bet, all this other stuff. But it was always the same thing. It was always just a group of these couple of guys, couple dozen guys at the most, who were just using murder to get their way. And they always got cover politically and diplomatically from Zionists in European states and, you know, all over the world who would always swoop in and say, well, you know, we're not with them. We're not with the terrorists. But, you know, you can't let all of Zionism fall just because these guys. Right. So you always need both of these sides. You always need the radical. You know, it's a classic meme. There's a comic that goes around a lot where it's like, radical Muslim, and it's like, do what I want or I'll kill you. Moderate Muslim, do what I want or he'll kill you, right? That's sort of how it works. And it works with the Jews in Israel as well. But all this is to build up the idea that just effectively, functionally, in reality, the state of Israel for 50 years before it was actually codified in the UN was not a state, it was a gang of murderers. It was a cabal of warmongering psychopath terrorist that literally invented terrorism as a concept in those early days. Okay, so the original core militia of psychopaths goes through a couple iterations, goes, you know, the Irgun breaks off, the Lehi breaks off, then the official Haganah, they get mad at those guys and say, you're not allowed to operate anymore. And then like a year later, they bring all those guys back and create a new, you know, organization that employs all of them and all of their, you know, worst attributes. It's just this little core of murderers. Now, what does this have to do with what's going on today? Well, it still exists today. It still operates today. They still run on the same strategies as they did back then, and they've never been effective ever in their entire history. And we can go through some of it, but this is from like chapter 4 or 5 of the book when they're talking about actually creating the organizations that exist now. So this is Ben Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel. Ben Gurion kept all of the agencies under his direct control. The Mossad and Shin Bet were under him in his capacity as prime minister, and military intelligence fell under his purview because he was also minister of defense. It was an enormous concentration of covert and political power. Yet from the beginning, it was kept officially hidden from the Israeli Republic. From the Israeli public, rather. Ben-Gurion forbade anybody from acknowledging, let alone revealing, that this sprawling web of official institutions even existed. In fact, mentioning the name Shin Bet or Mossad was publicly prohibited until the 1960s. Because their existence could not be acknowledged, Ben-Gurion prevented the creation of a legal basis for those same agencies' operations. No law laid out their goals, roles, mission, powers, or budgets in relation between them. In other words, Israeli intelligence from the outset occupied a shadow realm, one adjacent to, yet separate from, the country's democratic institutions. The activities of the intelligence community, most of it Shin Bet and Mossad under the direct command of the prime minister, took place without any effective supervision by Israel's parliament, the Knesset, or any other independent external body. In this shadow realm, quote-unquote state security was used to justify a large number of actions and operations that, in the visible world, would have been subject to criminal prosecution and long prison terms, constant surveillance of citizens because of their ethnic or political affiliations, interrogation methods that included prolonged detention without judicial sanction and torture, perjury in the courts, and concealment of the truth from counsel and judges.
Do you understand what they're saying?
Do you understand what they're saying right there? That this little core of psychotic murderers that created a gang that was then codified into the IDF, the Mossad, Shin Bet, that these continued to carry out assassinations, continued to carry out missions, but were never actually codified into the Israeli government system. So they weren't like you think of it as like the state intelligence of a state. But it's not that. It's still just an independent cabal of murderers and assassins. They don't have the protection of, you know, state authority. They shouldn't, at least. Officially, they didn't. But they were still murdering people. They just got away with it. You know, when our government kills somebody, ideally, there's a review process. There's legitimacy to the, you know, exercise of deadly force that our government monopolizes to itself because it justifies that monopoly of force with the fact that it should be and legally only ever is applied when appropriate and with oversight from civilians. Mossad didn't have oversight from civilians. Shin Bet, they weren't even allowed to admit that it existed officially. So there was no law saying, you know, in the United States, we had there was a law that created the CIA. Congress passed it and controlled its purse strings. That didn't happen in Israel. So when I say there's like a very small cabal of psychopathic murderers that run the world, like they're not a government. They're not official. They're a mafia. And they kill people and they torture people and they blow up buildings. And they do it for themselves, for their own reasons, to their own ends. It's not democratically justified. It's not, that's all it is. It's just a group of murders. That's it. And Benjamin Netanyahu was a key member of this. Ehud Barak was a key member of this. Ben Gurion was a key member of this. Ben Zvi was a key member of this. Ariel Sharon was like the biggest factor in any of this. Menachem Begin, or however the hell you say his name, was a big part of it. Like, every major prime minister in Israel's history has started as a member of this unofficial, unaligned, independent cabal of murderers. And by the way, in this book, there's multiple stories where they do some egregious murder. They get caught doing it. There's going to be an investigation, and the intelligence agencies go to the prime minister, whoever it is at the time, and they say, "Prime Minister, do we want people to know who you've killed? If you're going to investigate this thing where we killed these Palestinians, do you want your operations to be exposed? Because we've got them. We've got all the evidence of them." And so, of course, it gets shut down. So that's the way this works. People in positions of power first have to be indoctrinated into the program where they commit crime. They participate in crimes against humanity or other outrages. And so then if they ever want to actually grow a heart and undo some of the damage that they've done, they won't be able to, because they'll be blackmailed with the actions that they took part in. And then you call it an intelligence agency and you give it the facsimile of legitimate authority. But it goes on. Mossad's charter, which was written by Harel, was equally broad and ambitious. The organization's purpose, according to its official orders, was a secret collection of information, strategic, political, operational, outside the country's borders, carrying out special operations outside Israel's borders, thwarting the development and acquisition of unconventional weapons by hostile states, preventing the terror attacks against Israel and Jewish targets outside of Israel, development and maintenance of intelligence and political ties with countries that do not maintain diplomatic relationships with Israel, bringing to Israel Jews from countries that refuse to allow them to leave, and creating a framework for the defense of the Jews still in these countries. In other words, it was charged not only with protecting Israel and its citizens, but also standing as a sentinel for world Jewry. So put these two things together. So what is Mossad? What is this targeted killing program that became a state intelligence agency? According to the people that founded it, according to this book written by an Israeli journalist using firsthand Mossad sources, according to them, Mossad is, at least for a while, was not an official expose, or it wasn't an official outlet of the Israeli army. It was a cabal of independent, non-state aligned murderers, and they were not charged with defending strictly the security of Israel. They were charged with being the enforcement arm of Jews worldwide. So when you talk about Mossad or you talk about Israeli intelligence, you're not talking about a corollary to the CIA, a state intelligence agency whose job is contained to the well-being of the nation that it serves, ostensibly. And we know how that goes. But what this is a non-aligned group of killers who are going to murder anybody they perceive as a threat to the Jewish people anywhere and everywhere. That's an entirely different thing. That's an ethnic mafia. That's all that is. That is literally no better or worse than the Cosa Nostra. It's no different. It's just treated as if it's legitimate and authoritative. It's just treated with legitimacy by, you know, people who are aligned with it in our country and countries all over the world. But when you read stories about, you know, Israel wanting to, you know, kill the Iranian leadership, this is the only thing they know how to do, and it's never been necessary, and it's never even really been that effective. I go through in the episode that comes out yesterday, or tomorrow rather, I go through the first couple of chapters of the book. Just about every single attempt they make fails at least once. They never suffer any consequences from it because they always have diplomatic cover to get away with it. And it just, at a certain point, like we gotta just stop treating Israel like it's a normal nation. It's not. It's not even really a nation in like a real way. Like it is a headquarters. That might be a good way of thinking about it. It's a parasitic state, but it's not really like a state. It's like a headquarters. It's like a home base, but it's not like a state. It's not like a nation. It's not like the people in that nation are of that nation, and that nation operates on that. It is an international operation with a headquarters in Israel. I think that matters. I think that matters a lot. I think it matters a lot that it's this cabal of psychotic murderers that can't help but kill everybody all the time. Oh, and by the way, even when they succeed, even when it goes perfectly and they get exactly who they wanted to get and nobody else, which almost never happens, they're just constantly killing innocent people all over the place. It's genuinely, it's crazy. It's crazy how many people they kill all the time and have forever. Where was I going with that? What was I saying? I was getting distracted by my memory of all of the stories of all of the murder going on constantly everywhere. But even when they succeed, even when they get their guy and nobody else, there's always a backlash. Like almost every single time they successfully kill somebody, they're euphoric. They literally have parties. They're like, there's recounting, like they kill a guy and they're like having a big party with the prime minister and all the Knesset is there toasting champagne. And then like the next sentence will be like, but actually it had really devastating diplomatic consequences. And instead of stopping the suicide bombers, they actually ramped up 10 times following that. So it's like, but they never learn. They never change their tactics. They never suffer any real tangible consequences that make them change their mind. Time and time again, they murder the people that are helping them. They murder the people that they need to succeed in whatever they're doing. Or they murder the British and piss the British off. Or they murder the guy who's doing the suicide bombings and even more suicide bombers come. Or they try to kill somebody and they end up killing his entire family and he's not even at home. And they never suffer consequences. Or they send a hit team to Norway and they murder a Moroccan neighbor waiter in front of his pregnant girlfriend and spend 6 months in jail before getting let out. So they never actually suffer the consequences, but they also never pay the price either. They never pay the price for murdering people. They never pay the price for failing. And they never learn their lesson when they succeed and everything just gets worse. They just keep murdering people. It's like they have a mindset of just like, we just haven't murdered enough people. If only we can murder these people, then everything will be fixed. So I guess they'll need to murder Iraqchi, and then they'll need to murder the Pakistani negotiators. Then they'll need to murder the Qatari negotiators. Then they'll probably need to murder Trump and his family. Then they'll need to murder J.D. Vance. And like at the end of it, they'll be sitting there covered in blood, just going like, Where's all the anti-Semitism coming from? Why are all these worried? God, we have so much more killing to do. That's like at a certain point, we just got to recognize. We have to just like, we know who our enemies are. We know who our enemies are.
Have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th. 2026 coming up, and they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026, and they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I gotta say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this and the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition, with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America, 250 years strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, Ride Fast, Live Free, just a classic Betsy Ross flag, 1776 Free, they came up with that, I think that's pretty cool. Defund the Deep State, that's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there, 1776, 250 years of freedom, they designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are, you're going to promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you really got to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. So, hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.